I always have a lot of things going on in my head, Robert. And it occurred to me while I was going to the Albert Heijn, access to the club lounge so I could get some beverages. What's going on with you? Do you have any topics you want to discuss?
Oh, yeah. I've added a couple to the episode 9 list.
Mm-hmm. Now, to as we often, our fans are doing to ape some other podcasts, which shall remain unnamed. Yeah. Do we have some sort of a shared show notes that we have?
Well, kind of. Yeah, perhaps. Sort of. Yeah, yeah, perhaps. Wait a minute, are we live?
What is the Robert? Yes, of course. Is this the show?
We're recording. Always, what's in the show is always in the show. Now, okay, serious business voice now.
what this week? What is the Robert Brook topic blast?
We're on episode 9, aren't we? We have to pretend that there's been a big gap between episodes, and we're now on episode 9.
Yes,
and the topic blast. Is item number 1 is your internet connection is unstable. it just came up with a big warning to me.
Finally, it's not my fault. People? It's someone else's fault.
Momentarily, it was my fault. Cloth napkins, magazines in airport lounges. And I'm going to add dentists to that. Dentists.
Oh, this is a good list already. I mean, we could easily spend 3 hours on cloth napkins.
Yes. I knew you'd go straight for that. Robert's dumb cloud questions.
So cloth napkins.
Robert's dumb cloud questions. Because I worry that, you know, you're running a clock. It's like you'll say something and then you'll say, that's $400, please. What's hot and cold?
For you, it would be 400 pounds. That's what I would, sterling.
Good. That's nice. Yeah. What's hot and cold? Because you're in Amsterdam and that's the place I've been coldest in my entire life. Although I might talk about this, my memory is terrible. This is madness. Who wrote this? Can you teach business people to do modeling? Sleep, how great it is, or how great is it? And where we came in, Robert should step up and do the show notes.
Oh. That's fair. We've delivered on the first item, so your KPIs are just shot through the roof this year. You're going to get 110% compensation.
I work in public services. That's not how it works. Well, I mean,
which of your topics one do you think may be the worst one to talk about?
The worst one, I think it might be what's hot and cold, because I have a faint feeling that we've actually spoken about that before, because we've done so many episodes. They just run into each other, really. I mean, it's just years and years. But it was a weather thing. And because you're in Amsterdam, I was there on a New Year's Eve very many years ago, like 25 years ago. And it was the coldest I've ever been. Definitely the coldest. Like frightening cold. So in 1985, I was in Amsterdam. And was there on my own, and was staying in I can't remember where I was staying, some tiny hotel somewhere. And it was New Year's Eve, and I went to a place where they were, you know, letting off all the firecrackers. And I went to Chinatown, the Chinatown in the center of Amsterdam, or what I took to be Chinatown. And there was this massive crush of people, and there was a Chinese restaurant, and it was closed. The people in the Chinese restaurant, the staff, and they took me onto the roof, and the price I had to pay for being taken off the street was to let off more fireworks from the roof of a Chinese restaurant. which was great, although terrifying. One of the guys there handed me what looked like a landmine, and he said in Dutch, "Throw off the roof." So I was standing there, and he lit it, and there it was in front of me, like a cartoon bomb. And I threw it, and I suddenly realized I'm throwing it over a crowd of people. And he was delighted by this, and it let off a colossal explosion. Anyway, a couple of hours after, I was going back to the hotel or the room I was staying in, and it was so cold, I honestly thought I was going to die. I mean, I thought I was going to, like, collapse on the streets of Amsterdam and just be found dead. It was brutal. I'd never felt cold even half as bad as that. I'm sure it's global warming or something. It'll never happen again.
Well, now, this was 1985, huh?
Oh, yeah. 1975.
You know, do you realize that you had your own special version of Big Trouble in Little China? It was all captured in there. Everything happened.
It's all a dream.
I've talked to several Amsterdammers and Dutch people. We'll put a pin in this. I have finally figured out the difference between Holland and the Netherlands. I verified this across two bona fide Netherlands citizens, so I feel confident about their
finally.
Exactly. Anyhow, what both of them have mentioned, and an Uber driver I had, is that it has not frozen over in the Netherlands for 25 years.
Oh, that's probably when I was there.
I prefer it to be another way. So, because usually what they do is they like they ice skate like to the south of the country or something. It's like some sort of big to do, as it should be. So maybe back then things were colder, but it doesn't seem to be too bad. Tell me it rains here a lot.
Does it? I mean, maybe it does. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I assume by like London and Seattle standards, you might as well be like on a Mexican beach as far as the rain goes.
Yes.
I have been warned that it will soon rain, and it's not going to be perfect,
right?
Like it's been here. Yeah, but that is like, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to remember when I was like cold enough to think I was going to die, as it were, and it's not coming up. But yeah, being cold is that's almost the worst. I don't know what it is, but there's something like it's one thing to be being hot is uncomfortable, but being cold is scary.
It is actually scary. Yeah. I felt like I was losing control. You know, the extremities were like shutting down. Yeah. One of the extremities being my brain. It's like getting the bends. So where have you been hottest?
Exactly. Where have I been hottest? I mean, probably in Austin. Like it's just it's not like as people like to say about the Southwest. Well, it's a dry heat, whereas in Austin it's I guess a wet heat. So it's very humid and muggy. I don't know how you all describe it, but there's a lot of humidity in the air, and as a consequence, it's kind of like the inverse of a wind factor. So the wind factor like lowers the temperature because it's so windy, and the mugginess I feel like raises the temperature, and so. When was I?
You're onto something there.
Yeah. I think there was this one time where, you know, here's I don't remember specifics, but the following situation is when I know I've been the hottest. Where you're trying to go to sleep in a bed, and for some reason your air conditioning doesn't work, and so even though it's night, and so it's not technically the hottest of the day, it feels like the hottest moment because you just like. You cannot relax. All you're focused on is how fucking hot it is. And you just can't settle.
Yeah.
And so that is the most, that's probably a situation, the hottest that I've been in. And I think there have been some, to call them hotels would be charitable. There have been some places where I have paid money so that I could sleep somewhere. And they don't have air conditionings. And those.
Yes.
they're the worst. and you're just dreaming. You're just thinking how cool this could be if there was air conditioning. But that's probably it.
The hottest I have ever been is New York. And I worked there for a short period of time. And for my employer of long ago, Time Warner, and we were in, you know, a big skyscraper, you know, it's all air conditioning, that kind of stuff. And I didn't realize what really. So what it meant was that in was like the world, and outside the building, you load. And oh my goodness. And I remember walking down this pavement, as I would say, and the big throng of people walking along. And they were all taking a detour around something. And I thought, has someone fainted or something like that? And as we were walking along, I suddenly realized they were walking around the exit, the blower exit for the air conditioning, you know, where it blows out the hot air. And I didn't notice this until I got up there, and my legs were almost on fire. And I got to where I was going, and I just phoned back, and I said, I'm not coming back, not coming back. I would rather
New York
die.
Is out.
But I think
I'm canceling New York out. In my life. You know, so far it's been yeah, I've
it's not going to happen.
Yeah, so this is like the third time, I think, is it the third time? I'm losing track. But I have been in Amsterdam many times recently, and it's just I think I could get along with this weather. It's much better compared to Austin.
Yeah. Well, I feel I'm taking away from the subjects we've been circling in.
And what's that?
Cloth napkins. Mm.
Cloth napkins. Hmm.
I think napkins. It's like you're at a meal. You have a cloth, and someone has typed or used. Oh, right, okay. When it's like it's a napkin for one meal, and then you wash them.
That's right. And this is the
use them until you. I do think we have the worst internet connection. It's like.
I know. What is up with that? My understanding was that in Europe, everything is perfect. This is the whole reason I'm moving here, so I can finally have good internet.
Yeah.
I
hope that most people are listening to this on Overcast, so they can just take out the silences in between, make us sound normal.
That would be nice. Well, you know, I've researched it. And it's only an hour flight to go between Amsterdam and London. So maybe I'll just have to start doing that. I don't know if that would be a sneaker net. That's right. It's not so much a sneaker net. We could call that the jet net. That it's much faster to put the meat sack on a jet to be face-to-face than to rely on.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing there's maybe like one thin copper wire that goes between the mainland here and the island that you reside on, and that must be the problem.
Yes, yeah, it's probably wet or something.
wait, I know this is all because of Brexit, isn't it? They just like you don't get that sweet EU internet.
No, we're going to be denied from now on. That's it. God.
Given the lag in our connection, so allow me to. I was going to say, let me lay out my cloth.
We're just going to have to talk over each other.
That's right. I'll lay out my cloth napkin.
You go,
which I think you summarized. That's right, and that is so. Cloth napkins, very nice. I enjoy a cloth napkin, but the issue is, now do you use the cloth napkin, as you said, once? And then you wash it, in which case you're going to need a lot of cloth napkins. And I'm not really sure if the ecological impact is good, because it's not expensive. I mean, it's not cheap to like wash something. Now, on the other hand, what we do in our household is we will use a cloth napkin for maybe 5 days or so, right? So it might have some little yogurt things on it from the kids. It might have, you used it, but it feels like almost like a hand towel in a bathroom, that you don't throw it away after one use. And I don't know. I mean, is that, but then when you're done with the napkin, you know, you fold it up and you put it back in the drawer. I think, like, I have thus far not encountered a culture that has a receptacle for a used cloth napkin that is intended to be reused again. And most cultures are very good about, if there's an item that's going to be soiled, there's some sort of like a mechanism.
Yes. Yeah.
To deal with that item, especially if you're going to use it again. Like I've noticed in my travels in Germany, and I need to verify this up here in the Netherlands, but in the hotel rooms, they all have a, how do you call it? A toy.
Mm.
Someone has used this brush to the degree of which there's some leftover water in there. But I think that's to sort of facilitate moisture when you're cleaning things. So there's an example of an item that is used that becomes soiled, and there's a whole philosophy behind how you store that item and how it's taken care of. And so I would assume that if people were using soil that you would use to make this okay, but I am not aware of such a system, which leads me to believe that cloth napkins are supposed to be single use. Hence my dilemma about cloth napkins.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still going to go with the yogurt. I feel like it's acceptable.
Mm.
And the ecological load feels like too much, I think. Mm.
Exactly. Now let me ask you another question. You know, I'm always a bit of a, historically at least, I'm always interested in what people are up to. I have seen several movies recently. Most notably, there's some movie about, I forget what it's called, a recent movie. No, it's not a movie. It's like some BBC series about Thomas More. And I noticed first in this movie, but I've seen it subsequent in other movies, that the, what would that be, the 1500s? The eating style then is you would have a napkin. And much like you might expect from a, let's call them a rapper or a hip hop person who will like, let's say they're in the South, and they have a giant towel wrapped mm-hmm. over their shoulder because they sweat and they have to wipe it up. That in these shows and media from the 1500s, not from, that take place in the 1500s, when they eat, they have this large napkin draped over their shoulder that they use. And I feel like that was perhaps the apex of napkin technology. Like, it makes a lot of sense that you would just drape this napkin over your shoulder that you could use kind of like a handkerchief. So is this something?
Towel.
That's exactly. Is this something that when you were in your education, did they cover this in the history classes?
No, we covered trenches. Do you remember? have you come across trenches?
Is that a shovel?
No. A trencher. This is. I'm not making this up. A trencher. Maybe this is somewhat earlier than the towel. Mm-hmm. But a trencher is a large piece of. You make me doubt everything now. That my every word that I say now, I'm doubting. Is look what I'm remembering is that a trencher, like trencher, was a large slab of bread on mm-hmm. which the food would be put, you know, like, mm. like, and mm-hmm. the instead of a plate, and then you'd eat the meat, and then presumably you could eat the kind of bread thing underneath. But yeah, the towel size napkin, due for a comeback, because I think it would go down well. You could just wander around with it hung over your shoulder. Monogrammed, maybe.
that would be good, especially when you go to sort of like a festival of food. You just have a monogrammed one. Yes. Well, allow me to assure you, I have also heard of the trencher.
Oh, thank goodness!
I've also heard of the trencher. So I can independently verify this concept. Now, the other concept that I've heard about a trencher, which I haven't thought about until now, is considered a charity in this sort of feudal system that you would eat on a trencher. And then you would not actually eat the trencher itself, but you would give that to the poor people. And that is how you would rain down grace.
Yes.
And, you know, I think there's, I'm trying to rapidly think, there are some food cultures still where you sort of use, what pops into mind is Ethiopian food, where they, you bring out, there's this big platter and there's the, what do you call it? Not injera, but the, whatever the Ethiopian name for their soda bread is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not only do you get rolls of soda bread, which presumably you use like, some sort of complicated spoon to get the food. Mm. But they also line the big dish with the bread. And so they have their own sort of like a trencher, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm always very unclear. This kind of is actually like very much so like the cloth napkin thing. So am I supposed to eat that bread or am I not supposed to eat it? And if I'm not supposed to eat it, that seems like a waste. Like I don't need, yeah. I don't need that bread under there.
Yeah. I reckon, I think eating it would make you look like a complete schmuck, or not eating it would make you like a complete schmuck. But it's hard to tell which. So choose wisely. Mm.
This is true. And you know, it seems like it, there's a similar thing that you get in Tex-Mex, where if you order some guacamole or they often. And this is sort of like a trick, I think. You get what seems like this giant bowl of guacamole, you know, sort of like seasoned ground up avocado. And you start eating it. And what you realize is that there's a bed of iceberg lettuce underneath it, almost like this filler. Ooh. And it's almost like there's another phenomena in the land of free refills, that is America, where you say, I want a drink, but with a very small amount of ice, right? Because ice, of course, displaces things. Yes. And, I guess in the land of free refills, that wouldn't matter. But when you don't get a refill, you don't want to get much ice because you'll get more soda.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking what I need to remember to do when I order guacamole is say, I don't want any lettuce at the bottom. You don't need to give me more. Like, you don't need to give me more, but I don't want lettuce. Because here's the problem. Yeah. Kind of like the Ethiopian bread is if there is lettuce at the bottom, what's going to happen is the guacamole is sitting on top of it. And some of that guacamole is going to stick to the lettuce. So you're losing guacamole. Yeah. It's almost like this. It's like this downward spiral of we put this lettuce in here to think that there is more guacamole than there actually is. But the act of putting lettuce in here actually makes it less guacamole than we are giving you. And and it just seems like, that's right. It's a crime. It needs to stop.
It's a crime. Yeah.
Just don't use lettuce.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, who wants
so cloth that? Napkins, highly related.
Yes.
So there's really no answer. Leave the yogurt on there, reuse it.
Yes. I think so. I think so. I mean, it's cloth, isn't it? I mean, it's not like what I don't know. I doubt everything I'm saying now. I'm about to say kitchen roll. You have the kitchen roll? Like kitchen towel, maybe.
Oh yes, the kitchen towel. Yes.
Yeah, and having that as you know, a kind of a napkin light, as it were, and that's obviously you know, temporary and disposable. But napkins. But how about napkin rings? Have you ever come across napkin rings?
Oh, napkin rings. I think that you know, that is one of the many titles that I would use to describe my childhood.
Oh, right.
Napkin rings. There was a time in my life.
Chapter 2.
That's right. Where napkin rings just predominated. And there were many varieties of napkin rings. Some of them might be funny. Some might be formal. Wow, that's fast. I haven't thought about napkin rings for probably 20 years.
Huh. Yeah.
That was a thing. Yeah. I guess there are no more napkin rings. Even if you go to a nice restaurant, they just fold the napkin, you know, in like a swan or some sort of pyramid situation.
Yeah.
That's something we should bring back.
I haven't seen a napkin ring for ages. Yeah. How about branded ones? Datadog napkin rings. Ones.
That's right. Or they could just have a C with an accent on top. And those will be my napkin rings.
That's my napkin.
Hands off.
Hands off.
That's my towel, which I'm going to drape over my shoulder in some sort of dinner situation of a utopia until my head gets cut off. What's up there? What's y'all's position on Thomas More? Wired? Tired? What's the deal? What's the national take on that guy?
Oh, I think. Well, this is a difficult thing, really, because I think I can out myself as a small R Republican, or at least a big P parliamentary Democrat. So people like Thomas More and others who will go nameless, who champion the cause of the people you vote for, I'm a big fan of. And, you know, challenges to the power of the monarch is a big thing, I think. But Thomas More, there is just over the river from where I am now, there's a church and a very interesting statue of Moore, I think, and the garden of his house, I think, which has got a kind of a, it's not an Epstein statue, but I'll drag it out somewhere. But yeah, it's all over there. That's where he lived. Unless I've again got it completely wrong, which is quite possible.
Well, you know, history is just an approximation of how you want to validate your current living based on what other people have done. So it's very fluid.
Yes. Yes. He's utopia man, isn't he?
You know, while we're on the topic of stuff across the river, I'll tell you an anecdote I tell people often that I think about is, you know, you took me on a tour, sort of Robert's tour of Parliament, which is lovely. And then I forget which church we went on. And I think I've even told you this, but I think about it all the time is you and I are walking along and I look down and I'm like, oh, look, there's a king that I'm standing on top of. So that's a good reminder. That we all die, and then next thing you know, someone's just standing on top of you. It doesn't really matter.
No. But
that is, I would hardly recommend if you find yourself in a place where you can just go stand on top of the grave of a king, you should do that. It'll sort of cheer you up a little bit. Put life into perspective.
So speaking of which, how are you finding Amsterdam, the city? Because I only remember it from a very long time ago. And my recollection is quite hazy.
Well, I think Amsterdam, the city. Well, I guess by saying the city, we could at least divide it into two things, sort of Amsterdam, the concept, and then Amsterdam, the city. And I think, I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. And I mean that in a good way.
You hate it.
I think they have things figured out here. They're just like, it's sort of like, I don't think there's, I mean, I'm sure, you know, any place you can only achieve about, let's say 40 to 70% figured outness in life, I think ever. But I think they're in that sweet spot. They just like, they don't seem to have problems. Now, as with all of us white people, and I assume the other people of the world, they have sort of a lengthy history of terrible, horrible things that they've done throughout the 500, 600 years of their history. But at the moment, they're just sort of like, things are great. Like, I think the layout of the city is good. The infrastructure that they have is good as well. And by infrastructure, I mean both public transit and kind of like the urban planning of how one would get from point A to point B with a minimal amount of suffering. I mean, there's the whole like tourist aspect to it, right? You know, not that I'm not one of these people as well, where it's just sort of like, you know, that's another good topic is like, really, what's wrong with tourists, right? Like, I think a lot of people, they overhate on tourism. But what tourism does bring is not only a volume of people, but it's sort of like just, I don't know, it just brings sort of commercialism that may not be welcome. But even that is kind of nice. Like, I feel like the tourists in Amsterdam, I mean, this sounds kind of shitty, but I don't mean it to, is like, it's not really like a sacred, holy place. So you can't fuck it up, right? Like, there's no way that a tourist comes here and sort of like, it's not like if you went to the Grand Canyon and you like threw your Mars bar wrapper into the Grand Canyon. Like, that kind of act is, it's not like possible here. It's not like it's dirty, but there's just like, there's no way to like screw it up. Like, it is what it is, and it's in a good state. And so, for example, you go to the red light district and you're like, holy shit, red light district. And there's just, you know, people thronging there and gawking at prostitutes. But I mean, maybe it's because of I'm a man and I can think this, but like, it doesn't really feel seedy. It just kind of feels like when you go to a popular restaurant and it's really crowded and you have to wait 40 minutes to like sit at your table. Like, it's a similar feeling. You're just like, oh, here I am, red light district, and I need to go down that alleyway so I can go get a beer.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel touristy.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And then, so the, as you go further out, it's more of like a regular city, in so much as any gigantic European city can be regular. And, then the concept of, I think the concept of Amsterdam is good too. And I base this largely on, a history of Amsterdam I've been reading, and I read up to like 1600, and, you can kind of see some tracers. There's some tracers of Amsterdam, like and I think I would describe it as a very pragmatic city. So one, when it comes to monarchs, in a very polite way, they're like, "How about fuck that shit?" You know what monarchs do? They impinge on my profit margin, so I'm not into that. Now, so there's this constant battle against like the monarchs not coming in and screwing things up, or I shouldn't say screwing things up, not coming in making commerce difficult. Like you see in like France and Spain and England to some extent and other places. And so I think there's a bit of that carries over to the present day, where it kind of goes back to my analogy is like I want to go from point A to point B, and I don't want some sort of like king taxing me and making that difficult. I would just like to accomplish this goal. And so there's not this sense of, so far what I've encountered is there are, and maybe they're just being polite, but I feel like an Amsterdamer would never tell you that you're doing it wrong. They might be like upset with how you're doing things, but they're very accepting of just like, well, I don't fucking know. That guy's an asshole, but you know, good job for him. Like, I have no problem with that. So they seem to be accepting of things.
Yeah. I think. And you know me, I like old stuff. What's the old stuff situation?
The old stuff situation. I think it's a, I think it's a mix. I think the old stuff is represented in the canals themselves, right? Because the canals are very old. And so that's kind of like that's the first physical manifestation you have of old stuff is, if you know the history, like these canals have been here forever. And you can pretty immediately tell from a map that they are totally artificial, right? Like they're man-made. Like there is nothing that would be that perfect, perfectly made. And then the other old stuff situation are the buildings themselves, right? So I keep asking like Amsterdam people, what is the name of that style that the buildings are in? And maybe...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they never have an answer. Like they just, they almost don't understand the question. And that in itself is an old stuff. Like the fact that I find the style of Amsterdam row houses so distinct and almost only in Amsterdam, and I assume the rest of the Netherlands. But if you live here, you have no idea what I'm talking about. Like that just seems totally normal. That would indicate to me that it's always been there and therefore is the old stuff. And I think those are the two main old things that people don't realize. It's almost like if you were in America or the United States and someone were to say, you realize that you have an almost endless amount of space. Like there is so much space here. And most American people would be like, I know you're speaking English, but I don't understand what you're saying. because we just take for granted, like in the US, that it's just like we have so much space. I feel like you could take, you remember that Star Trek episode in the original series where they're on some planet and they realize there are so many people on that planet that everyone has basically like maybe like half of a meter square deal with. Yeah, and I feel like you could take that planet and put it in America and it would still be exactly the same. Like we have so much space that we have.
Exactly. Netherlands is,
you know, you would just be like, I mean, I'm standing next to some corn, but the furthest human is about 2 hours away. I think those are the two old things of Amsterdam. Like, and it's interesting. And you read the history book and they'll like, what's the word? Not dig out. They, where you have a ship that goes through some water and it sort of like clears the undergrowth out, not undergrowth.
Oh, dredge.
You do whatever that is. And they always find old stuff. Dredge. There you go. So just like any place, and I imagine this is true in London and Barcelona and Berlin and everywhere, is like every time they make a new parking garage, you know, they find some new historic artifact that
usually
the city somewhere.
Bombs or plague victims.
Exactly.
Welcome to Europe. You may remember us from bubonic plague.
I like, there's this other, like, I mean, I shouldn't be laughing about it, but there's this other, like, there's this other, it's not seedy. Well, I mean, I'll just be judgmental because I fully acknowledge that this is a problem that we have in the character of America. But there's this always this other disgraceful thing in European history where it's like, maybe we didn't have slaves, but we were responsible for bringing the slaves from America to from Africa to America. And definitely, like, pretty much all. So there is a lot of that stuff going on that you find traces of. But in general, yeah, there's just like old shit everywhere if you dig deep enough, which is charming. Like, we don't really have that in America. There is no old shit. There's like, I don't know, Philadelphia. but that's that's about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So there's the old.
Well, thing. Sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a
so let's see. What else do we have on here?
I have a rather strange anecdote.
Mm. Do tell.
Which I'm going to tell you because otherwise I will forget. Which involved my dear son, and speaking of old stuff, we live in a house that used to have fireplaces. We've got one fire that still works, and most of the fireplaces are bricked up. So in the room in his bedroom, he's got this bricked up fireplace and a little, what's it called, like a ventilator in it. And he said, I can hear something in behind the ventilator. And, you know, go and listen, can you hear it? And I just didn't want to face up the possibility that something had fallen down the chimney and
sounds like a lot
died
of work.
There and it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And I, being me, damnably lazy, I thought, well, the thing's going to die. There'll just be a pile of dead bodies there anyway. There's nothing we can do. Which I tried to diplomatically tell him that by not speaking about it and walking out of the room, which is very, very caring. And many hours passed, actually. And he occasionally would remind me, can you hear the noise? Can you hear the noise? And I would say, no, can't hear anything. I can't hear anything. Nothing's happening down there. And yes, you know where this is going. And I thought, well, the time has passed. So whatever is in there is deceased. And I went out, and while I was out, he, what are they called? Sledgehammer. That's it.
That's right.
He broke through the wall. Yeah. Broke through the wall and where the ventilator is, and reached in and took out a crow. So not a fully grown crow, like an adolescent crow.
Oh my.
And took it out and revived it, took it downstairs. Worked out what you give an ailing crow, like chopped up liver or something, and revived it, and then set it free in the garden at the back, and it took off and then kind of faltered and crashed back down into this kind of recess behind a little kind of outbuilding. And then it was fed again in this kind of crack where it was for hours, and apparently the parent crows were kind of circling around looking for it, and then it revived again and flew up into the tree and was reunited with its parents, and then flew off.
Hmm. That's a wonderful story. That's really nice.
Better than that.
And
yeah, it was amazing. And we're always waiting for each other. So he effected the repair of the hole in the wall by taping it over with my recent copy of the London Review.
The London Review of Books, I assume, is what I'm about to hear in 5 seconds.
Yes.
Well, you know, so first of all, that's a nice story. It's very like it's almost Edgar Allan Poe-ish. And yeah, that's so much care and like trying to take care of things. Second of all, I think we found out that your son is going to be a druid.
Yes.
So you've got that to look forward to. Friend of crows. Do you think that crow might become his familiar? Like it'll come back, start talking to him, hang out with him?
Yes, definitely.
Now, if all of a sudden...
Oh, yeah, himself.
What would you do if all of a sudden there was a crow that lived permanently in your house? Like, it's not really like a parrot, but like you would have a stand, it would hang out with you, it would always be there. Like, would you accept the crow into your family?
I think I would. If it was like you know, well behaved. It's I don't want it like crapping anywhere. I like the idea of animal. You know, an equal, if you will. But you know, the parrot and all that. I'm swearing or anything, that would be too much.
No. No swearing.
Crows are supposed to be quite intelligent, aren't they?
Yeah. I think my understanding is crows and octopuses are two undervalued intelligent creatures that we should, not batter them up and deep fry them and then dip them in marinara sauce and eat them. As delicious as
that would
may
not
be.
But good. No.
Yes, whereas delicious. The crow, I feel like if us being humanity had as close a connection to crows as we do to dogs and cats, we might sort of like advance a little bit. I think the crows probably have a lot to offer.
Yeah, I think so. And they're more serious than parrots or something, or maybe a rabbit. But I mean, it's a rabbits seem like they know what's going on.
I think let me just postulate here. I think that crows are the wolves of the sky, right? Because like you look at a wolf, and there's some sort of like respect of intelligence and sort of like civilization that at least I have for a wolf, right? Like they seem to have things figured out. Now, of course, us being humans, we're very good at just like fucking up with wolves. Like we could just wipe them out as we run many places. But
yes,
I think the cunningness of a wolf is equally like that's the crows are the wolves of the sky in respect to cunningness. Like they seem to be very, very clever and they can figure things out. And they're almost like they have this, not that I've hung out with a lot of crows, but I feel like if a crow is looking at you, it's kind of like analyzing the situation and sizing you up and figuring out what to do. And similarly, I think that's basically what a wolf does. Like it's very in tune with humans and kind of figure out what's going on with them. And then
was Odin blind?
Was Odin blind?
Yeah.
Just in one eye, as I recall. I think, and then you're right. A crow ate his eye,
because
right?
I think so.
Yeah.
But he had two birds. I don't think they were those, though, because there's some soft them called
Odin lost his eye because
one,
he went to like
and they
he,
fly
he went
off
to some sort of
and
pool of knowledge or something, and he asked whatever his peer god, like, I want to drink from that pool so that I can be all-knowing. And inexplicably, there's probably some sort of professor who could explain this to you. The the whatever god that was that knew everything.
His eye fell out?
That's a great idea, but I'm going to need your eyeball. So, like, the deal was, if you give me one of your eyeballs, I will make you all-knowing, which that seems like, and right.
Deal.
At least so, Odin was like, huh, that's a pretty good trade. Whereas I'm not really sure what this other god deal. Got. Like, I don't know what you do with an Odin eyeball.
One of them.
I think Odin might have tricked that other god.
Yeah. Yeah, so they were specifically ravens. Still, it's cool. It's the same thing.
Mm. But a raven and a crow, that's basically the same thing, right? I mean, I don't want to offend any crow and raven experts, but I feel like a large black bird that makes a squawky noise.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, just like turkeys.
Well, we should bring this painful we should bring this painful laggy episode to an end. I'm imagining the waveforms of this episode where there's just like gigantic blank spaces, and I'm going to have to go in and delete them so it sounds natural. Who knows? Maybe one day we'll have good internet.
You just do background music or something.
Oh, that's good. Like hold music. I'll go get the Cisco hold music to put in there. I think maybe what we should try is we should use a conference call line, which will give us like that scratchy voice, but maybe it will actually work.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Because we have that technology. We can do it.
Oh, yes. That's a good point.
You see, what's great about the lag, and you'll hear this about 5 minutes from now, is you went, and then it was quiet for about 20 seconds, and then I heard,
This is almost it reminded me of that Twitter message you sent about whatever it was, Web3's we were supposed to be waiting for flying cars, and then you pasted in this pitch from someone about like smart locks or something.
Yeah, LED flat very much flat screen panels.
That's the one. Which felt almost late 1980s.
Yeah. When you see like really poorly targeted spam in LinkedIn, it just like you just think like this is an entire platform built around targeting the business interests of people on it, and this person is trying to sell me like LED screens. Yeah, I don't know.
Can they not read?
It's just I don't know what happened to like ontologies.
I have things to say about that, but I'm not going to say them because it'll drive us both insane. So I'm gonna write them down for next time. Before we go, do you have one recommendation before our minds collapse into the wormhole?
Yeah, I'll give it a recommendation. Let me see. I'll give two. So my first recommendation is when you're in Barcelona, I forget the name of the store, but you can look it up, and it is the oldest shoe store I think in Barcelona, and you should go there and buy yourself some espadrilles. Now, there's two types of espadrilles as far as I can tell. And I think an espadrille is characterized by the soul of and literally the soul, not some sort of metaphoric spirit of the shoe. But the bottom of the shoe is made of sort of like coiled rope or kind of a rope-like substance, but not like a cheap-ass rope thing, like a tire shoe. Like it's very well put together and it's woven out of, I don't know, hemp or jute or some other kind of like Middle Ages bullshit of rope.
Yeah.
But the bottom is made out of this rope stuff. So you're going to find an espadrille that's basically like a Tom's shoe, if you know Tom's, right? They buy a shoe. You buy a shoe, and then they send 10 other shoes to some poor people in Detroit or something.
So they say.
And so You don't want to get that one. That one's fun with the cloth on top. But I happen to get this top, this type of shoe that it looks like a normal shoe, and it's blue suede, light blue suede on top. And these shoes have lasted me a long time. And they're sort of like, they're the kind of shoe that you can, they're the perfect kind of shoe that I like. They're not super comfortable, so there's not that. But one, you can wear them with shorts. Two, you don't need to wear socks, so you can put them on easily. But three,
oh, nice.
If you're in the pinch, if you were in a pinch, you could actually get up in front of some executives wearing these shoes and not look like you're wearing shitty shoes, right? Because they're like exotic, right? Like there's something about them. We look at them, you're like, those are not like, there's something about those shoes. And they're very comfortable. And by nature of being suede, they sort of retain coolness to them. So when you put them on, they kind of make your feet feel kind of cool if you're into that. So I forget the name of the store, but you should look that up. Go get these shoes. Now, my second recommendation, very topical, is I would like to recommend if you're in Amsterdam and you're flying out for a morning flight, you should stay at the Amsterdam Airport Sheraton, which is a lovely place. This is like the third time I've been here in recent time. And inside the Amazon Airport is an Albert Heijn grocery store. And you can basically do your own kind of miniature Silk Road between the hotel and the Albert Heijn, which is a Dutch grocery store. And it's a good grocery store. It stays open until midnight, which for all the praise I had for Amsterdam, there is one core problem is I think they all go to bed at like 6:30. Like the city just seems, aside from the tourist area, it just like shuts down. No, it's more like 9, but still. But this one stays open until midnight. Yeah. It stays open until midnight. So you can just go there and they've got great stuff. It's like a tiny grocery store. So you should look into that. Those are the two things keep in mind for those people who can, you know, just casually go to Barcelona to pick up a pair of shoes or find themselves in the Amsterdam airport. How about yourself? What are some what's a recommendation you would have?
I have two. I have a kind of mirror recommendation in a strange way, which are both footwear related. Mm. Now I'm thinking about these kind of slipper things called Mojabes. And the Camper brand. So Mojabes are all over the internet, notorious, and they have a very snazzy website. But I ordered some, and I've got some, and they are very clever, but they are just not for me. They are too, I don't know. They get my feet too hot. They're too plastic or too rubbery or something like that. I mean, they're great. Mm. But they're not as slipper-like as they appear. However, Camper have a sort of trainer type shoe called Pelotas or Pelotas XL or Pelotas Light, which are quite nice trainer type shoes. And mine are dark blue, but very very light. And I'm a sucker for a very light shoe. A great fan. And one final recommendation, which has been absolutely everywhere, but I look at it every day, is I have a Seiko watch, which I got because I listened to a podcast of all things. And since I got it, I haven't wound it at all. It's not battery, by the way. I mean, I haven't been looking at it, wondering whether I should wind a battery watch. But it's just fantastic. It just keeps on going. And it's
like a perpetual... motion one or something
and it just does the job and I absolutely love it, really enjoy it.
There's something and I mean this in a good way, charming about a perpetual motion wristwatch. The mechanical nature of it, it's reliable, does that one thing, and I like the one that tells the time and the current numeric date. I find that handy because I'm always confused about
what I'm looking at.
That's good stuff. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I had one of those, but it broke, and so I stopped using it. But it was a Seiko that had like a dark blue watch face on it, and silver, and would show you the time, and it was nice. I did like that. I'm probably gonna get another Apple Watch. That's what I'm gonna do.
Good idea. Running.
Yeah, all the running and push-ups that I do.
Yes.
But mostly so I can see what a text is about in my pocket. That's pretty much the core use case for an Apple Watch. For a passively healthy gentleman such as myself, All I need to know is when someone wants my attention. Or let me specify it more clearly. I need to know what the topic is of someone requesting my attention so that I can feel well educated about the fact that I am going to ignore them.
Yeah, yeah, that's the spirit, I think.
Well, on that note, I mean, the next episode will be 10. That'll be a monumentous occasion. Yes. We'll have to, have a candle, need a cupcake.
Yeah.
Beats me. We'll do something Definitely. To celebrate.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see everyone next time.
Meet in the middle of the channel. Bye.